Okay, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM Silver City, the Gila Members Community Radio Station, a voice and a choice in Southwest New Mexico. I'm here today with Dr. Julian Saporiti of the band Nono Boy. And we're going to talk about one of my favorite tunes of all time, which is Imperial Twist, about the Nono Boy project and his experience making this album. And I'm going to go ahead and just start with you introducing yourself and talk a little bit about the Nono Boy project.
Yeah, so Nono Boy really is just well, first of all, the band name is a great book by a guy named John Okada that I came across during all my graduate studies, sort of the first Asian American novel. So I wanted to take a band name from a book to, as a teacher, to sort of trick people into reading, which is great because I know that probably a lot of those books have been read because of the band name, which is neat. And that's kind of where this whole project comes from. It's just a school project run amok. I was a musician first and foremost in my early adulthood, I guess, like late teens and through my 20s. And then I went to grad school, and I am what people call Asian American. I'm from one of those countries, or my mom was from, she was born in one of those countries, Vietnam. And I didn't really learn much about being Asian American or Vietnamese growing up in Nashville, Tennessee, where I'm from. So when I got to grad school, that was kind of an opportunity to fill in this very kind of blank cultural history, which is a lot of folks in America's sense of self. I think history can restore a lot of what they don't teach us in school, but you kind of got to go find it on your own. So I was doing that. I was studying out in Wyoming, of all places. I'd gone for my master's degree. I'd studied like the Chinese railroad workers and miners and some of the interesting and awful histories that befell those folks, those early immigrants and workers. And then in my state, or in Wyoming, there was a Japanese, what they call Japanese internment camp, which is like 10,000 people were locked behind barbed wire, removed right from their homes on the West Coast. And, you know, it was really interesting to see whole little museums of people who looked like me, but in black and white photos. It's like something that I didn't really come across in my life. And I've always liked history, but where I grew up is very black and white, you know, racially and also, you know, figuratively. So
right,
a lot of civil war history, a lot of civil rights history, but the sort of like this sort of like under the radar Asian American history, I never really learned about, you know, nor did I really learn about a lot of the Native history or borderlands history, which I've since looked into a lot through this project. So Nono Boy is just a way to take a lot of these histories, specifically folks that kind of looked like me, these Asian-y looking folks, and telling these stories that I never learned in school growing up. And I figured, you know, I actually, after that master's degree, went on to Brown University in Providence to do a PhD, and kept learning, but I didn't want to just write papers because I knew people don't really read them. Like I think most people I've read don't even read novels after high school, let alone academic papers. So we're kind of kidding ourselves in the academy that our work is going to get out there. You know, if we don't kind of turn it into media that people can consume. So for me, as I said, I was always a musician growing up. So folk songs, you know, being from Tennessee, it's kind of like what naturally came to me. And there's this history in America of writing topical songs into folk songs, sort of songs with a message or a history. So I just kind of use that old form, and just sort of that's how the project was born. And it was really meant to be more of a teaching example for my students or for colleagues to say, hey, you know, you do all this research, why not like put it into something which normal people can understand instead of the five other people who have read all the books that you've read in your field.
Right. And your music, yeah, it did exactly that for me.
You awesome. Know,
I had said, we had been emailing each other, and I talked about being from Eureka, California, and there were a lot a lot of Vietnamese, Laotian and Hmong, mostly Laotian and Hmong that lived in Eureka. And they were my friends. We grew up together. I'm 46, so I'm like right there in the age of your parents' children. And I have a sister who's 50 and a younger brother who's 46. And we were friends with all these kids. And what always, something that really stood out to me as an Indigenous person, Native American, is like our trauma is something that I've always thought about. Like it's always been there. Like you can't, like for me personally, I can't just like go somewhere and be present and not kind of feel like, oh, the kind of like internal pain. I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain what it's like to have emotional trauma and historical trauma. But one thing that I'd noticed too, with my Laotian friends is, never really talked about it, you know, and I know it for me personally that it would be really painful to have to move somewhere completely new, to go to a culture completely different from what you've known all your whole life, and then on top of that, so this imperial twist, right? And then on top of that, you have your kids and you know it the historical trauma that keeps going, but one thing I've noticed is that it doesn't really get talked about very often. I did see a lot with Chinese history, being from California, and we did have a terrible incident in well, it's Trinity County, but it's really close to Humboldt County where I live. It's right next door. But actually, the miners had finished up a railroad and they blew up the mountain on top of the miners. Jeez. And it's called China Camp, and it's on Highway 299, kind of near Willow Creek, kind of between Willow Creek and Redding, if you're familiar with the area. So, but no one really talks about it. My grandfather talked about it because we were there for forever. So historically, you know, we have a lot of like of that connection with the past that not everybody talks about. Not hardly anyone knows these things happened in our Humboldt County. And in Eureka, there was a lot of Chinese that got basically run out of town and murdered. And we did have a thriving Chinatown.
1885, there was the city just expelled all of them. It's like Eureka's kind of, well, not famous to me because I have a PhD in Asian American Studies, but most people, again, don't really know about this stuff. And, you know, imagine that, like an entire city government saying everyone of this race, you know, has to get out, which, you know, connecting to your Indigenous heritage, that's the story. You know, I come from Tennessee. Which is, you know, the one thing we did learn about was the Trail of Tears and, you know, a brief day history lesson. And there's these overlapping histories that I'm very interested in. And I explore this in a few different songs and sort of some of my work, especially today with before the pandemic, I was down at the Mexican border a lot, you know, thinking about my mom was a refugee, but she was let into the country. And why aren't these people being let in? And it's a whole thing, but it's kind of like, you know, exploring remnants of old camps that concentrated Japanese Americans and then going down to ICE detention centers of like modern day camps, you know, and stuff like that. And these kind of like echoes of history that keep seeming to repeat itself. I like directly looking at the historical past kind of rubbed up and juxtaposed against the present moment. And there's a lot of overlap between you know, and these are different Native communities spread throughout the United States. The Southeast is very different from, I don't, what's your tribe affiliation?
I'm a Wallachy, Pitt River, and Pomo, and I'm from Northern California.
Right. And so those are very different histories, but, you know, you kind of stretching that whole imperial twist metaphor, it's sort of the Vietnamese, the Lao folks, the Cambodians, they're feeling many generations later that same American empire and the might of that, you know, and my family, you know, is displaced in a way that is historically specific and different from, you know, the Native folks that once were in the area that I grew up in, Tennessee, that I learned about. But it's that same empire just hundreds of years later. And that's something that I find interesting because I think it's pathways to solidarity when you kind of put those stories against each other, figure out how they're different and independent, and respect those histories independently, but also understand that there's a lot of the same effed up mechanisms of, you know, empire perpetrated by the American government that should be talked about so it doesn't keep happening, you know?
Right. And on the Navajo reservation, so I live in New Mexico. I'm in Washington State right now, but I live in Southwest New Mexico. And we did have quite a few concentration camps right on the Navajo reservation, which is north of where I live. My ex-husband, where his family lived in Loup, which is about 50 miles southwest or southeast of Flagstaff. There was a huge concentration camp, and his family talked about it, and they were actually, they had like baseball teams, they would play against the Navajos, and they would do, and they actually really kind of welcomed them because they were, you know, they put them on reservations just like us, you know,
right.
It was federal land. So, you know, and it's really, it's that part of American history. It's just so hard to think about without getting really sad. And one thing I loved about your song was about Imperial Twist is that it's so like Saigon tears, and then it's so sad, but it's so catchy. It's such an earworm. You know, I'm smiling through tears and when I listen to your music, and it's really powerful. So I'm so excited that I get to talk to you today. And I really appreciate all your time. I just think you're fantastic. Your music is great. Your voice is incredible. My daughter even says so. She loves your voice. She's like, oh my gosh.
You know, wow. When you can get the youth, that's how you know you're doing something right.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, I work at the radio station. It's kind of an art town. It is a very artsy town, a lot of musicians. So yes. Your story was, I think, a great way for our community to get to know you and then understand when I'm like, you know, talking about your music, like what it really means. But there's one other thing I wanted to ask about your mom and about kind of the Americanization and kind of assimilation. What are her feelings about that? If she has any, or if she shares it with you, are there things that you do personally to bring your culture back to you?
Oh man, this is so rich and complicated. We really need a couple of beers and hours to.
I know. I'm get sorry. I put you on the
bottom
spot.
Of this one. But I would say, you know, first and foremost, like, I would never speak for my mother. Some of the songs, like, definitely relay quotations and stories that my aunts, her sister, and my mom and their mother have told me over my lifetime. And, you know, people in our quote-unquote community, that is to say Vietnamese people. So some of my music does deal with that. And I don't really, you know, part of the reason I write songs, aside from, I think, academic papers, while they're useful for me, an academic, are useless to the general population. Part of the reason I write songs is because I can express myself so much better than, if I, was trying to speak. So that's sort of why I use art, because it can get into so many nooks and crannies, like emotional places. It can help people from completely different backgrounds from myself, like you, maybe, deal with their own histories that are linked by things such as empire, displacement. But I will say, without speaking for my mom, that there's a complication there that is deep. There's a complication, an emotional, a political complication, just a human complication that I can't really understand being the child of someone displaced by a war. And as far as the assimilation stuff, she's pretty well assimilated. It's funny because as Vietnamese people, we have layers of colonialism. So my mom and I speak French to each other. We don't speak Vietnamese because she grew up in a French colonial society.
That's interesting.
She was born before Vietnam got its independence via Ho Chi Minh from France in 1954. And so she grew up in this weird pocket She was born into like French Indochine in the late 40s, and then as a child, it was the country was cut in half between the communist North and the South, which is really, you know, kind of this puppet colonial American state after a while. But she always grew up going to French Catholic schools, speaking French, like that was her more learned language. Like they spoke Vietnamese at home, and but it was like to this day, you know, my mom and my aunts, when they do get to see each other, will speak in this sort of Creole, this sort of jumbled French Vietnamese language, which is really beautiful and interesting. And so the idea of, again, that sort of like black and white assimilation, you know, versus your own culture, or the idea that one has their own pure culture, is something that I in particular have never really had. And so there are things like, I do like discovering things that Vietnamese people do, identifying as one of them through my mom, you know, that are not even things that she did growing up, if that makes sense, because she comes from this very specific French Vietnamese culture. And I've recently gotten into this specific type of woodblock etching and printing. Like,
nice.
Which is like from this specific village in northern Vietnam, which again is completely different part of the country. They were fighting each other,
right?
But this place called Dong Ho, and it's this beautiful style of printmaking. And I've gotten into like these studying these different villages, which do these different arts, whether it's like making silk or making paper, or all these different kinds of things. So artistic practice is a way that I get into that stuff. I haven't yet tried to tackle learning Vietnamese because it's a very difficult, beautiful, but very difficult tonal language. And already French is enough to keep me up to on my practicing.
It
but
is.
Like,
that's...
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, I guess, I think that what, if you talked to me at the beginning of this project, say 7 years ago, before I had done all my studying and written like, I don't know, like 100 songs about all this stuff, considering this, the art has really helped me work through this and having conversations with so many people. I mean, that's like a lot of people who come to the concerts will at the end of the show say, you know, they might not be Asian like yourself, and but they might have something, you know, that, you know, my mom came from Guatemala and she was a refugee or an immigrant, you know, and I identify with this, or, you know, I also am like from a mixed background growing up in the South or something like that. And I found this, like, I think a lot of just peace, like what you said, about how you feel a sadness a lot of times, like it's kind of at the front of your mind because of the, you know, the histories and traumas that you come from. That's something I feel less and less these days. And part of that is, I think because of all the work I've done, like really like kind of coming face to face with the void. It's like, yeah, we can't go back, you know, we can't go back, and that's okay. A lot of people can't go back. You know, this is no longer your land.
Yeah.
As much as virtue signaling liberals with the land acknowledgements will tell you at every poetry reading you go to, which I always find interesting. It's like, are you going to give this back? Like, why are we doing this? Even know the name of the
Well,
people.
You can just get me a cup of coffee and we'll call it good.
At least buy me, yeah, at least buy me a coffee if you're going to do this whole rigmarole.
Yeah, I'll listen. I'll listen.
Yeah, but you know, I think, and that's, sorry, that's being kind of shady. I am one of those virtue signaling liberals, but like, I just feel like you can go deep, you know what I mean? And I feel like a lot of times, I live in Portland, Oregon. It's the land of inclusive yard signs, and yet there is a whole, you know, thousands of homeless people on our streets, which people don't really seem to even recognize in their $500,000 homes, you know, with all their liberal politics and stuff. And so I guess that's an interesting thing, Nikki, that maybe, you know, it's a longer conversation for later, but at this point in my life, doing all this work, like really digging into the family history. And again, our family histories are different. I can never go back to the country my mom's from. You remain in the place that was taken from the people. These are different situations.
It is different, and I feel like the more that we talk about all of the hardships and struggles that people go through, then that we do find these places of, oh, wait, you know what? I did get Imperial Twisted. I got Imperial Twisted 200 miles away instead of 10,000 miles away.
Right.
We are forced to live in this country as Americans. And I feel like as Americans, you know, we got to be Americans for all Americans. I mean, there's so many different stories that are so uniquely American. I think I'd said that to you. Your story is uniquely American, you know, because it is what it is. This is how we roll here in this country. And we take and we share and we give. But, you know, anytime anyone's came here, it's been through pain, and people who were here, there's just, it's a lot of like, of joint pain. And if people just kind of like took the time to think about, well, like what your family, your mother's refugee status was when she came, and how she was maybe more accepted maybe than Guatemalans coming through El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much.
That's why I spent so much time at the borders, because it's like, one, I was at a place at Brown University, which is just like, it's like the opposite end of the MAGA Fox News kind of thing. It's like, you know, it's so left that it meets the right, kind of thing. Echo chamber.
I've seen that.
It's like we're so left, we become fascist ourselves and judging and like trying to tear down and call out everything as if life isn't terribly complicated. We're not all doing our best. And so everyone was up in arms when they were like, you know, they're putting kids in cages and stuff like that. It's like, oh, that seems horrible, but none of us have actually been down there to see this. And so I remember going down with my boys, Diego and Juan, who were also doing their PhDs with me at Brown. And we're like, we should actually go down and meet some of these people and see what's up. And especially as the kid of someone who is considered a refugee, it's like, well, you know, after Vietnam, Americans royally bungled that war. So they felt kind of guilty, and they let all these Vietnamese people and Southeast Asians in the country. That was sort of the refugee policy. So they were like good refugees, right? Because they were on our side during a war. Why are these people bad refugees? Why are they not even being allowed to come over the Rio Grande and seek asylum as is, you know, specified in laws previous? Like, why did the administration say, no, we're going to keep them in camps, even if they need asylum? Like, because usually the deal was you come across the border, you say, I need asylum, then you can kind of stay until your trial and be safe. But what I saw was wild. Just 3,000 people in Matamoros, in tent cities, or people living homeless in Tijuana, you know, waiting, like really escaping some horrible stuff, similar to like what my mom left for. You know, her grandfather was killed right in front of her. That's one of the reasons her parents shipped her off to the United States before the war was even over. And a lot of the stories, while not the same, are similar. I heard people whose fathers were killed by the cartel, or women who had been abducted by coyotes at the border and kept in like cages in a basement and extorted for ransom fees. And they saw people get murdered and raped next to them. Like, this is horrible, horrible stuff. And to not even grant people the humanity to let them in, you know, when they're literally, you know, metaphorically coming in from the storm, and just to keep them out there, it was mind-boggling. And, you know, going back to that original point, a lot of people come here. Even the horrible white pilgrims came here under duress. You know, that was the whole point of like seeking a better place, a place to have their religious freedom, so to speak. And, you know, I wish people would figure that out. You know, the white side of my family, the Italian folks, you know, were not treated particularly well when they came here. And it's funny how quickly we forget once we are accepted as white. And stuff like that in this country. And I think for, you know, people like you or myself who can't phenotypically maybe pass as white, if we have the darker hair or we get really tan and stuff like that, or our eyes look a little different, it's sort of a different story. But, you know, whether it's Italians or Jews or whoever, you know, a lot of people had a real tough go those first couple generations. And
yep.
I would just wish there was more historical memory, historical thinking, so to speak, because we'd find a lot more commonalities. And I think that's what's important. It's like, whether it goes back to, you know, original contact and all the horrible disease and genocide of Native folks on this continent, or whether you go back to 1600s importing African slaves and that just absolute atrocity, or these you know, strings of murders and expulsions and lynchings of Asian folks in the West in the 1800s. There's all of these overlapping histories that, again, are very different, should be studied independently and understood independently. But there's room to just have these conversations. And it's through having these conversations, and most importantly, I think making art, making something beautiful out of it, that I feel less of that sadness than you kind of spoke about. I'm seeing it because I guess I found something to turn it into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's making something that maybe you're feeling sad about. Oh, my migraine ended 10 minutes. But turning it into something beautiful. And I think your music is beautiful and you're absolutely fantastic. I think you're just wonderful for sharing all of your thoughts here today with me. I really appreciate it and I appreciate you. And I really hope to hear new music from you because you're just a wonderful musician, aside from any of the other, you know, what we're talking about, you know, musically. I just really appreciate your music. And then I just wanted to end by thanking you again, and just keep going, keep doing what you're doing. And if you're ever in Southwest New Mexico, you should come by and say hello to the Gila Members Community Radio Station. We do have a print fiesta, the Southwest Print Fiesta, and they do actually do woodblock prints. And
very
it's
cool.
Around, people from around the world come to it. So maybe you will. No,
that's
promise.
Awesome. No, I would I'd love to make it down there. We got one more album coming out on our label, the Folkways label, and we're going to do a tour about this time next year. So maybe there's a way to stop by and see y'all. You're near Silver City's near Las Cruces, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I had a wild night in Las Cruces once, and remember just waking up to a sunrise of those jaggedy mountains y'all got in the distance, and that's about all I remember. But it was a good time. And yeah, I'd love to buy you. Well, I'll buy you your land acknowledgement coffee.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Well, we better go. But thank you so much. And once again, you're listening to KURU 89.1 FM Silver City, Gila Members Community Radio. I'm Nikki and I'm out of here. Gotta go. Bye. Thank you.
Awesome. See you later.